We will be continuing from where we left off in our class this morning. We're talking about common mistakes that are made in parenting. And by the way, let's just point out, if you're a parent, you're going to make a mistake. You're going to make some mistakes. People are not perfect. Parents are not perfect. But what we do with mistakes is we correct them. Cooking, you can make a mistake. I remember when, before I got married, and I did, I cook occasionally now, and I cooked all the time then, for a year or two. And I remember one time I needed some more tomato sauce for chili or something, and I didn't have that much, so I thought, well, ketchup will work. It didn't work. That was a mistake. I haven't done that again. We all make mistakes, but as we go over this, if we see something that, oh yeah, I've made a mistake, then we just correct it and move on. And one of the things that's important is to be able to acknowledge to our children when we make mistakes. It's not a good parenting plan to say, I'll never apologize to my kids, because that's a sign of weakness. Our kids know when we make mistakes, and apologizing to them is also a good example in helping them to see things. This morning what we talked about was, first pitfall was the failure to discipline. Second was rewarding misbehavior. For instance, letting the child throwing a tantrum get his way, then expecting misbehavior. Number four is a really big one. This is probably one of the most important things to talk about, and that is failing to be consistent. Consistency, I don't know if you have the lottery here or not, but we've got the lottery in Pennsylvania. It's a horrible thing. It's down in Maryland, too. One fellow I studied with down in Maryland he would go a couple of years before and every Friday spend his entire paycheck on scratch-offs. I asked the fellow down, there's a little convenience store down at the end of our street, and I asked him after watching some of my buy lottery tickets go out, and I said, how much does the average lottery player spend? And he said, $50, maybe $100 a week. That's just ridiculous. Somebody once said that the lottery is a tax on people that don't understand math. And I think that's about right. What would stop them? What would stop lottery players from playing the lottery? Would slim odds stop them? No, they know they've got slim odds. The guy that goes down here and he spends $50 on some lottery tickets, if you ask him, are you going to win tonight? He'll say, I hope so. Do you think you're probably going to win big tonight? Do you think you're going to win the jackpot tonight? He's going to say what? No. But sooner or later I might. Right? Child psychologist that knew what he was talking about, more so than some other ones, I saw him say in a newspaper, he said, children are like gamblers. They will play the odds. If there's one out of 100 chances that misbehaving will pay off, they'll go for it. That's what lottery players do too, isn't it? You know, they don't have 100-to-1 odds. They've got, I don't know what, 10 million to 1 odds or more or something, but they're going to go for it, right? What would stop? I'll tell you what would stop lottery players in Pennsylvania. The commercials come on, and we have a groundhog that comes on and encourages people to play the lottery. It has to do with... you know, when the groundhog sees his shadow, that's out in western Pennsylvania. So then the second most famous groundhog encourages people to gamble. Well, if he would come on, and instead of at the end of the commercial to say, proceeds benefit older Pennsylvanians, it just was like this. Starting this week, there will be no winners at all. Zero money will be paid out. There will be no $5 winners, no $100 winners, no $21 million winners. From now on, we will not give money to anybody. You can see if your numbers match, but there will be zero payoffs. Benefits still, you know, go to older Pennsylvanians. How many people would play the lottery? They would stop. Why? Before, their chances were slim, but they played it. Now, they would not. Why? Because something just happened. It went from, I might get away with it, to, I won't. That's what Junior needs to learn. You know, he needs to learn that mom's going to win. You know, it's not maybe if I push and push and, you know, it. No, mom's going to win. Consistency. It needs to be like the laws of the Medes and the Persians. You know, that's going to what. Consistency also needs to be between the parents. If one is a pushover and the other isn't, is a child going to learn that? Is a child going to manipulate that? Yes, he is. There needs to be consistency. One time I was teaching a lesson on child training at a group camp, and I went through and I asked people to, I said, sum up some child training advice in three words. And there were some really good comments, but one of my favorites was somebody said, first time obedience. And that's pretty powerful. In other words, when you tell them to do something, expect them to do it the first time. You've seen those parents that say, Johnny, do you hear me? Do you hear me? Don't make me tell you again. Johnny, stop that. Johnny, do you hear me? Don't make me, you know, I'm going to count to 10. Johnny, I don't know why I won't obey. It's pretty obvious why I won't obey, right? I watched mom one time. She was telling her, no, don't touch that. Do not pick that up. Do not. I'm telling you, do not. And he looks at her. Do not. And he's about 10 years old. And he reaches up there and he picks it up. And she goes, oh, I'm going to get him a hearing aid for Christmas. That wasn't a problem. Mike, I would like you to relate the story that you told me about the three-year-old. That was very interesting and it makes this point well.
There was a mother, daughter, and grandmother. The daughter was 3 years old, and she was downstairs playing. Her mother was upstairs cleaning the room. Asked her daughter, yelled downstairs, said, Judy, come up here and clean your room. The grandmother looked at her and knew she heard her, but she didn't respond. She called a second time, said, Judy, get up here and clean your room. She still didn't respond. Grandmother looked at her and just knew she heard. Third time she said, Judith Ann, get up here and clean your room. Grandmother looked at her and she said, Judy, you better get up there and clean your room. She said, nope, she'll call me one more time.
That's at 3 years old. And what did the three-year-old learn? She learned the system. Mom probably didn't know it. You know, why doesn't she come? But she just developed an attitude of what? Now, if she'd had the attitude to be consistent, when I call her, she's going to come, it could have been different. But the child learned to manipulate that. I was in Boston a few weeks ago, or near Boston, Tingsboro, doing this series. And we took occasion to go down and visit Boston itself. And Boston was built a long time ago, and those streets are narrow. And there's lots of places where you can't park, obviously. And parking's a problem there. And I asked him, I said, what would happen if instead of towing cars away or putting that boot on them or giving them ticket and stuff, the city of Boston did this? If there was a big sign where it says, no parking. And the sign said, if you park here and your car is here for more than 10 minutes, you will get a pink warning slip. If your car is here, you know, for 30 minutes, you will get a yellow warning slip. If your car is here for 40 minutes, you will get a bright orange warning slip. And if your car is here for an hour, you will get a red ticket. What would that street look like? It would be full of cars with yellow and pink and orange warning slips all over it, right? Why? Because everybody learned the system. They don't mean it until later. Now, if they don't want a car parking there, what do they do when a car parks here? Deal with it right away. That's the way kids need to be dealt with. It's for their own good. He who loves him disciplines him diligently. Sometimes moms say, or dads say, I don't have time. That would take, why? As much as he misbehaves. If I dealt with every time he misbehaves, That would just take a lot of time. Yeah. For a while. once you're consistent and have it taken care of, no, it doesn't take that much time. But for a while, it's going to take some time, and the lack of consistency means it's going to take more time. But saying, I don't have time, you know what that's like? Oh, my kid has lice. Well, I guess we ought to do something about it sometime, but don't have time to right now. Maybe we'll get to it next week. Is that what you do? No, because those little guys are just going to multiply and multiply and multiply. Well, misbehavior is the same way. It's going to get worse when it's not dealt with. So you take time. Child training time is invested time, and it saves time. Because some parents won't take time to deal with every time a child disobeys, then they have 18 years of junior, 18 years of trying to deal with stuff because they never got that child trained. Get that child trained. Remember when we talked about this morning, getting them to understand no and obeying no at age 1 and 2? That's half the battle. Get that consistent and firm, and then it's easy. In my family, I've got 6, as I said. One's off and married now. But you know who gets in trouble? It's the 2-year-old. Well, he just turned 3 a couple weeks ago. But he's the one that gets the spankings. When my 7-year-old was 1 and 2, he's the one that got the spankings. When my 10-year-old was younger, she's the one that got the spankings. The older ones now, they may get a spanking maybe twice a year, you know, like the 7 or the 10, because they learned when they were littler, they had to obey. And now, they obey. It's well invested time, and it saves time. All discipline, Hebrews 12 says, seems for the moment not joyful, but sorrowful. But afterwards, it yields peaceable fruit. He who spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him diligently. Now let's talk about this. This is important, and it's easy to do. It's failing to control self. We're talking about disciplining children, not abusing children. And there's different types of self-control problems. There are people that abuse their children. Those people need to be dealt with by the authorities. And there's people who are just horrible to children, and those children need to be rescued from those homes. But lots of times, it's not something where children need to be rescued. It's just where, with their words and actions and attitudes, parents are not in control of their own self. What's the proper motive for child discipline? He who loves his child disciplines him. That's the motive. Loving discipline is not harmful abuse. It's not to vent our frustrations on. We're not given the right to punish our children so that we have a way to let out our frustrations when they aggravate us. That's not what it's for. Our job in punishing a child is to help the child. It didn't say he who's annoyed with his child disciplines him diligently. It doesn't say he who's, you know, wants to get back at his child disciplines him diligently. It said what? He who loves him disciplines him diligently. And like I said, there's people that need to have their kids taken from them because they're just horribly abusive. But there's a lot that do a different kind of abuse that just need to change the way they parent. And that's they yell instead of discipline. I saw a child psychologist being interviewed on a television program, and he was, you know, given the thing, you know, of course we never spank children. And the hosts of the talk, it was a talk show, there were people in the audience who would participate. And the hosts, there was a man and a woman. And the woman says, well now, like my 2-year-old, if she starts to like touch a sharp object or a piece of glass or a knife or something, you know, I'll take her little hand and I'll say, you know, no, no. And the expert goes, and it's important to understand that that's wrong. And, you know, we should never hit a child. Of course, they always call it hit. And when I was growing up, it was a spanking or a switching. You know, I had to, sometimes I'd say, Scott, go get a switch. And you had to go get that switch. And I'm glad they did it. that he's in, that's wrong. So here's this expert that knows everything, and then somebody in the back says, I have a problem. I just find myself yelling at my kids. I just yell and scream at them. And he goes, oh, don't worry about that. We all yell at our kids. I have a 3- and a 4-year-old. No, you don't have to yell at 3- and 4-year-olds. Why do you think he has to yell at his 3- and 4-year-old? Because he's in a silly house where he thinks he can't even say, no, no. You know, if you can't discipline a child, guess what you're going to end up doing, probably? Yelling at the child. Here's a scenario that goes kind of like this. Junior is, and I tell you, I don't even like video games, but he's over there playing a video. And mom knows that he's got a test in the morning at school, and it's getting late, and he needs to get ready for bed. It says, Junior, said, you need to put that away and, you know, go to bed. You got school in the morning. And he goes, okay. Right. 5 minutes later, she said, Junior, I told you, you've got to go to bed. You've got school tomorrow. Okay. Just a minute. 5 minutes later, Junior, are you still in there? You have got school in the morning. You cannot stay up all night playing that game. You've got to go to bed. Okay. Goes on a few more times. Finally, she gets a phone call. She's in there, you know, she's doing all this stuff. And then 30 minutes later, she gets that done. And then she hears, and she realizes he's still in there playing that game. She's told him like 6 times, and her voice has gotten increasingly tense each time. You better go to bed now. I'm tired of you playing that game. And she's gotten more and more irritated. Now half an hour's gone by. It's an hour past his bedtime. She goes in there. She goes, Junior, you get up right now and you go to bed. And he gets up and he goes. He goes, okay. And she goes, why won't he obey? That's just like that little girl, except he's learned I don't have to go until she's yelling and screaming. A lot of times, if we're yelling and screaming at our kids, you know what it means? We've trained them not to obey our normal tone of voice. And that's what's happened here. Junior's learned that, Junior, you need to go to bed, means nothing. It just means that later, you know, I'll have to do it, but not now. And so it's going to wait. Just like that ticket, you know, fake ticket scenario we talked about. Then finally, when he realizes, you know, that she's out of control, okay. And off he goes. You know what she needs to do? She needs to sit down with him and she needs to apologize. And say, Junior, I'd like to talk to you. I've been yelling and screaming at you, and I'm sorry. And I'm going to stop doing that. And Junior goes, cool. And then she says, instead, I'm going to tell you what to do in a calm tone of voice. Cool. And I'm just going to say it one time. Now, don't for a minute think Junior's going to believe it. You know, I was like, oh, I don't know what mom read, but okay. You know, he's not going to take this seriously. It's going to take a few times to convince him. So then she says, okay, Junior, you know, and about, she gives him some warning. In about 5 minutes, it's going to be time for bed, so you need to be getting things wrapped up. Okay. A few minutes later, she goes, okay, Junior, you need to go to bed now. Okay, just a minute. Hey, what? You're getting a spanking. What? Why? I told you to get up and go to bed, and you didn't obey. What does he want to say? He doesn't want to give the game away, but he wants to say what? But what? You weren't yelling and screaming. Right. Going to stop yelling and screaming. You're going to start telling you what to do, and you're going to do it. Can we start tomorrow night? No. And she needs to wear him out. They need to go to bed thinking, yeah, what's up? Guess what? Tomorrow night, don't think it's going to work. She's going to need to do it again. You know, and but guess what? If the law of the Medes and the Persians is in effect, you know, where the Bible says it changes not and she's consistent, guess what he's going to start learning? He's going to soon start obeying to her calm voice the way previously he only obeyed when she was screaming. And isn't that an advantage? Like the mother that, you know, why bother to go through the routine of saying it and saying it and saying it, then using the middle name, and then finally have to, why not just have it established in the family? When you say it, it's done. Isn't that better? Isn't that more peaceful for everybody? Or he's going to have to do it anyway? Being consistent. Better than yelling. Also, here's some other things on failing to control self. Sometimes parents don't control their emotions, and they get frustrated, and they say things like this to a child. What's wrong with you? I don't know why you won't do right. Oh, stop and think about how scary that is. Imagine you're 6 years old, and your mother says, or your father says, what's wrong with you? I don't know what's wrong with you. What have you just been told? There's something wrong with me. And the grown-ups don't know what it is. That's a pretty defeatist message, isn't it? Is that going to encourage a child to behave? No. The base test. Here's the parent. Child's throwing a ball in the house, okay? Now, there's going to be a vase over here that's going to get broken. It's your great-great-grandmother's vase. It's very valuable, and it's going to get shattered. Now, how do you react? Let's say scenario number one. Dad, you say, hey, come on, Billy, let's throw the ball. And then Billy throws the ball, boom, there goes the vase. Is Billy in trouble? No, Dad may be in trouble, but Billy shouldn't be in trouble, right? Did he disobey? Did he do anything wrong? He maybe wasn't a perfect shot, but that's not his fault. He was allowed to play the ball in the house, right? Shouldn't be in trouble. Now watch this. Mom sees Billy throwing the ball, and she says, Billy, don't throw the ball in the house. He looks at her. She throws the ball anyway. It bounces off the wall, and he catches it. What does she do? Scenario number two. He's throwing the ball in the house. He says, Billy, don't throw the ball in the house. He looks at her, takes the ball, he throws it. It hits the side of the mantle, swings over to the other the table, hits the vase, knocks it off, shatters it in 100 pieces. What does she do? In too many homes, you know what she did the first time? Billy, I said don't throw the ball in the house. You know what she does the second time? She's going to unload on it. Why? Because she's upset that he disobeyed? No. She wasn't that concerned about him disobeying. She's concerned about the vase. Guess what? There's two things in that room, and one of them was worth a lot more than that $1,000 vase. And that's that child. And his training is more important than that vase. Both times, he should have been in big trouble. You know why? Both times he deliberately disobeyed. She said, don't throw the ball. He looked at her, he knew what she said, and he threw it anyway. He should have been in big trouble whether the vase gets hit or not. And if he breaks the vase and she was letting him throw the ball in the house, it's not his fault. It's her mistake for allowing it to happen, an accident happened. Don't exercise discipline based on how disappointed or embarrassed or sad we are about something else. What's the motive? Training the child. Calm, cool, consistent, and in control. When parents get tense, I told you about the other night, Mom, she just gets so tense with a child, and the child gets so tense. And finally, I told her, I talked to her about this idea. I said, just be calm and be positive and be happy with it. Smile, but be firm. And a few days later, she said, ask me how it's going. I said, how's it going? She said, great. Ask him how it's going. I said, how's it going? He said, great. Calm, consistent, and in control. fruits of the Spirit. Galatians 5, 22 and 23. What were some of the fruits of the Spirit? Love, joy, peace, kindness, and what else? Self-control. Okay. Sometimes we may need to be, because if our child has really annoyed us, we may need to say, you go sit in the corner for a minute till I calm down and deal with this. We may need to do that to make sure that we get in control. But we need to be in control. Now, number 7, failing to use the rod and reproof. What did Proverbs 29 say? The rod and reproof brings wisdom. One without the other isn't good. For example, what's just the rod? You know, kid does something wrong, walks by his dad, says, whack! What is that? What did the kid learn? Maybe all he learned is stay out of dad's reach, you know, or go play in a different room. What did he learn? Not much. How about just reproof? My wife, I think it was, saw a kid at Walmart. And this kid is just pitching a fit. And he's screaming and yelling. He's kicking his mom or hitting her. He's in the little buggy seat, you know. And there he is. And he's hitting. And the mom, she'd obviously read some parenting articles and such that told her, you know, communicate to the child. You know, let the child know how you feel. And so she does. And she leans over and she says, I don't know what his name is, we'll say Billy. And she says, Billy, mommy doesn't like it when you do that. Well, of course he knows that. Why do you think he was kicking her? He's mad and he's kicking and hitting his mother. Oh, sorry. You know, that's why he was doing it. So she goes, mommy doesn't like it when you do that. It makes mommy feel bad. And this little kid just leaned forward in the buggy and goes, shut up! What good did the reproof do? What does the Bible say? The rod and reproof bring wisdom. There's value in the lecture. How many of you, when you grew up, before your mom or dad spanked you, you had to listen to the lecture? Raise your hand if you had to listen to the lecture. The lecture is good. Here's why. For one thing, it pricks that conscience. You know, you didn't want the lecture to keep going on. It's like sometimes you say, you hope, can we just have the spanking and get it over with? Because, you know, you get the spanking, you get it over with, and you go. But during the lecture, you got to listen to what? You got to see why you're wrong. We don't like that. And, oh, Scott, you know, why did you do that to your brother's, you know, toy? Would you have liked it if somebody had done it? I'm feeling bad, you know. It pricks our little heart, doesn't it? And so that's one reason the lecture is good, because it gets to the conscience. The child, before he's in trouble, needs to understand why he's in trouble. And not just be punished, but feel bad about what he did. So there's value in the lecture. The other thing is the anticipation factor. It turbo boosts the spanking. It's kind of like this. You know, you go to the doctor and he says, okay, I'm going to give you a shot. It's not too bad, right? But when he says, I'm going to have to give you a shot. Roll up your sleeve. It's going to hurt. Are you ready? Yeah, it just hurts more, doesn't it? You know, kid walks by and just, wham, what was that? But, you know, the lecture, the rod and reproof, do you realize what you did? Talk to him. Help him understand what was wrong. And then give him the spanking. And spankings don't have to be hard. For little kids, lots of times this will do. Now, if that won't do, then you need to step it up. And when I was bigger, you know, it was some hard spankings. And sometimes on my little ones, I've had to give hard spankings. When this didn't work, my brother one time, he told his 2-year-old, he said, pick these toys up and put them in the box. He left, and later when he came back to the house, she was still sitting there going. So he said, okay. And then you got 2 choices. Either you pick them up right now quickly, or you get a spanking. Which is it? She goes, spanking. So he decided that the spankings hadn't been hard enough, and he had to up the spankings. And sometimes they really do have to get very firm and hard and repeated till they get the point. But you don't need to take a little guy that gets the message with this, no, no, and make it more than that. You know, get enough that's made the point that addresses so that they understand. The rod and reproof bring wisdom, but a child who gets shame, gets his own way, brings shame to his mother. Number 8. What did Paul say in Colossians 3? Fathers, provoke not your children that they be not discouraged. And again, Ephesians, fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, nurture them in the chastening and admonition of the Lord. Notice this was said to fathers. Fathers can sometimes be too hard. Sometimes they're not firm enough. Sometimes they're not consistent. But sometimes they're just cold and hard. Some kids have to grow up in a household where you only get two choices from dad. Criticism or nothing. I've talked to lots of people who like grew up in a household and their dad would never hug them. Would never say they love them. I've talked to adults, grown women, who just would so much like to hear their father say, I'm proud of you, or I love you, or give them a hug. Or maybe there was one time they got a hug from their father and they still remember it. That's sad. Don't be one of those fathers that, you know, the best you can hold, if you did good, dad says nothing. Oh, phew. If you mess up, you're, you know, maybe it's at a baseball game and such. You should have caught that ball. You know, and it's, don't be like that. That's, what does that do to a child's spirit? That's a crushing thing to a child's spirit. Don't expect talents beyond their capacity. You know what? Junior can learn to sit still through services. Junior can learn to behave himself at the restaurant. Junior can be able to eat some ice cream and cake and have all that sugar and still be a well-behaved child. But you know what? Not every child is going to be able to do everything. You know, if you've decided he's going to be a professional baseball pitcher, no, maybe he's not. He might not have the physical coordination. She's going to be an opera singer. Well, if she's tone deaf, no, she's not. You know, he's going to be an NBA star. Well, if it looks like he's going to be 5'1", probably not. Although Spud Webb wasn't real tall, and he did pretty good. But generally speaking, you know, there's lots of things. This old adage, you can be anything you want to be. No, you can't. You know, if I wanted to be an elderly Asian woman, it's just out of the picture. That's, I'm going to get elderly sometime. But not every. We can be responsible human beings, moral human beings, good human beings. We can be people that love God with all our heart and love our neighbor as ourselves. But it doesn't mean that we're going to be, not everybody's going to be president of the United States. You know, the election only comes around once every 4 years. We've got 280 million people. You know, we need to stop thinking that everybody can be everything. If you've got a child that can get A's in school, expect them to get A's. If you've got a child who, when they work hard, they can get a C, then you be proud of them when they get that C. Because they're stretching themselves and they're achieving and they're accomplishing that. You know, don't expect more than the child is able to do. And don't have fluctuating boundaries. This can be aggravating for a child too. Some children, the father, if the father's in a good mood, you know, you can sass mom and he thinks, that's pretty good. If child, if father's in a bad mood, you spill your milk and you're going to get slapped. Cattle. We've got a lot of cattle here in Nebraska. Not here in Omaha, but in Nebraska. And you know how electric fences work? And I've been told, I don't know if this is so or not, but I've been told that people with cows can often, after a while, just turn off the electricity to the electric fence. Why? Because the cattle have learned. But can you imagine, but the fences stay where they're supposed to be. Can you imagine how aggravating it would be to be a cow and have moving fences? You know, it's like, you know, once they learn where it is, they can graze right up to the fence and everything. They can go over here and everything. But imagine, think, okay, I think I'm safe. Here's some clover. All of a sudden, wow, you know. And that's the way it is in some homes. You don't know where the boundaries are. One day you can get away with anything, another day you're in trouble for nothing. Children need boundaries, and they need them to be clear and firm. There was a study done with children in a playground, and without a fence around it, and here's a busy street, and here's a busy street, the children tended to cluster in the center of the playground. Then they tested with a fence, and the children had a good time running all over the playground and playing. Why? They knew where the boundaries were. You know, they knew that they were separated from the cars and the bad guys and everything, and that they knew, here's our area. You know, and knowing where the well-established boundaries were, they felt safe. Children need boundaries. There are children that come from homes where they don't have boundaries, and they spend a little while with a family where there are boundaries, and they love it. And they get back to the other home, and they don't go by those boundaries. They, you know, they're not required to. But they need that security of those boundaries. This one's important. In fact, this next point, when I was in Maryland, I talked about this, and a lady came to me a few days later, and she said, that was a life-altering event for me. She said, my child is happier, and my child is better behaved. It's a fairly simple point. We're talking about training children, not controlling them. How many times have you heard a father say, no child of mine is going to do that under my roof? Okay, well, that's better than saying, sure, go ahead, do it under my roof. But what's really being said there? No child of mine is going to do that under my roof. Does that mean they're not going to do it? That's viewing parenting as control. I'm going to make sure what goes under my roof. Now, that's not training. As soon as they get out from under your roof, what are they going to do? Child training means not just controlling them, but training them so that when they're not under your roof, who's controlling them? They've got self-control. Fruits of the Spirit, self-control. They're following God's rules and they're following wisdom because they've been trained to have self-control. Too many parents settle for situation control instead of training the child. Michael and Debbie Pearl is a couple, kind of Calvinistic and some other concepts that they have wrong, but they write on child training, and they've got some good stuff on that. They've got one illustration that makes this point about this thing of Twinkie. And it goes basically like this. Several kids are over, and mom's over, and the child that lives there, he comes in the kitchen and he gets a Twinkie, and there's only one Twinkie. Well, mom knows this is a problem because he's about to head outside where the other kids are and there's only one Twinkie. So what does mom do? This is not a good situation. This is a problem coming. So since there's only one Twinkie, she says, no, no, you can't have that Twinkie. You need to put it back. Junior acts like he's going to go for the Twinkie. Mom realizes, oh, that's not good. So she goes for the Twinkie. And they have a wrestling match over the Twinkie. Now, I'm not sure what the Twinkie looked like when they got done, but mom was bigger, and mom finally gets the Twinkie. And then the guy goes, thinking I have a cracker. And she goes, okay. What mistake did she make? The problem here was not that there was one Twinkie. The problem here is that she has a defiant child who rebelled against her. Is she dealing with that? No. She thought the problem was what? There's only one Twinkie. And so when she won that battle, then the next one comes, okay, you know, give him what he wants now to satisfy him. I won the battle. I took care of the situation. No, you didn't. The real situation is still the problem. And here's the point that particularly helped this lady. It comes from my daughter, Brianna. Brianna is 14 now. She's always been a real good girl. Some of mine have really tested me at times. You know, and you know how kids will do that, even the good ones? There'll be one day when they just decide to go for it, you know, and they just go. I remember well the day that Brianna did it. And she didn't do it till she was about 3 years old, and some of mine have done it at one. She's about three, and she, of all my kids, I had to spank the least because, I mean, if I just went like, Brianna, she was, you know, and then she'd straighten up. But this day, we get in the car. She's three, and she was supposed, when we got in the car, she's supposed to put herself in her little, you know, booster seat and close it in. We hop in the car. I crank it up. I start out, and my older daughter says, "Dad, Brian didn't get in her car seat." And so I start down the road. I said, "Brian, get in your car seat." And she didn't. Okay. So I pull over near a creek, and we get out. And I think I had her get a switch. And I said, "Brian, you did not get in your car seat." I said, "What did Daddy do?" And he went through the routine. And like with Lucas, what I'll do with him is if he disobeys, I'll say, "Oh, no." I said, "What did Mommy tell you to do?" "Don't touch it." I said, "And what did you do?" "Touched it." I said, "Oh, no. Did you disobey? What do you got to get?" "Spanking." And sometimes I'll let him pick, "Which hand do you want?" And there's this little thing I do because I want them to feel not a victim in the situation but involved in it. And say, "Which hand do you want it on?" You know, and he usually picks one, but some of the other ones, they sit there and think about it and decide. And then, you know, and then get, "Now, okay, you want to go tell Mommy you're sorry now?" And see, I did that with him at Hershey Park the other day. I'll get back to Brian in just a second. But I'm at Hershey Park, and he's all excited. Oh, Hershey Park is like an amusement park ride thing. And so I've got Lucas, so that means we ride the ladybug and then, you know, the little train and all this stuff. Okay, so we're in line for the little train. Other people are riding the coasters. I'm doing the ladybug and the little train. All right, and he's two at this time. And he's jumping up and down. Well, there's a lady he's about to bump into. And he's grabbing her and he's jumping up and down. I said, "Lucas, I said, you might bump that lady. You need to stop jumping." He stops jumping. Then he starts jumping up and down again. And I decided, and you got to be careful about disciplining in public, but I've decided I'm going to keep doing it because I want to set an example. I don't want people to think that spanking means that parents are, you know, beating their kids out of anger. So I decided right there, I said, when jumping, I said, "Oh no, Lucas." I said, "What did you do? Did Daddy say don't jump?" "Yes." "And what did you do?" "Jump." And the lady behind me started laughing. And I said, "What do you got to get?" He goes, "Spanking." And I took him and I spanked him. And the lady behind me, she said, "We need more of that." She said, "That something happened, that went away, but we need more of that. That's what we need more of." And we got to talking and stuff, and I ended up handing her a card, you know, for her church and such. But she was really glad to see that. Well, I get Brianna, and we have a talk about that she's disobeyed and everything. And then I spanked her, and I said, "Now, Brianna, get back in the car seat." And Brianna got up, and she got in the car, and she sat down beside the car seat. Well, that's not how it's supposed to go. So I brought her back out, and we had a talk again. And I took that switch, and this wasn't little things like this. I wore her out. I said, "You get back in that car seat. It's my job to teach you to obey. Now you get in that car seat." This time, Brian got up, and she sat down beside the car seat. I took her out again, and we had the lecture again. And I took that switch, and I wore her out. I said, "Now, Brianna, don't make me do this again. Get down in the car seat." Finally, she got in the car, and she sat down beside the car seat. I took her out again. We had the lecture again. I wore her out again. And I think again she sat down beside the car seat. I think it was the fifth time before she finally got in the car seat. Now, what would have been easier? Put her in the car seat. Right? Would that have been child training or just controlling? That would have been just control. What's my job? Train the child. I'm not here just to control her. I'm here to train her. What did she need to do? She needed to obey. So she did. And later that day, I asked her, I said, Brianne, why did you do that? Did you think that if you kept not sitting in the car seat, Daddy would give up? And she said, uh-huh. And my little girl needed to find out that Daddy wasn't going to give up. And she needed to submit her little stubborn will to the rules. And she's going to need to do that when she's, now that she's a Christian. She needs to do that as well, and she does. But this lady, she heard that, and that's what helped her. She said, before, you know, if she wouldn't get in her high chair, I would put her in the high chair. But she said, what I've started doing now, every defiance, I nip it in the bud, and I make her obey. And she said, after just 3 days, she said, she is better behaved, and she said, she is happier. That's what children need. Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. Train their hearts. As a little boy one time, he was told to sit down, and he didn't want to sit down. He finally had to. He sat down, and he goes, but I'm still standing up on the inside. Guess what? When they're still standing up on the inside, your job's not done. You train them until they realize they were wrong and they do what's right. That's training. I think the rest we're going to... Oh, I've got to get in a little bit of this. Let me do... Yeah, I need to get in this real quickly. Another mistake. If we don't allow them this, they might rebel and leave the church. Should we let her be wearing that? Well, if we don't let her, she might rebel, might leave the church. Should we let him go to that movie, that concert? Well, if we don't, he might rebel and leave the church. Should we let her do marijuana in the room? Well, if we don't, she might rebel and leave the church. You know, should we let him get drunk? Well, you know, I'm exaggerating now, but you see the point. How many of you would say, oh, you know, looks like, you know, dangerous, you know, neighborhood here, and I hear, you know, sirens and stuff, and let me just go hand some money to some people because I'm afraid they might ask me for it. You don't give away money because you're afraid the thief won't steal it. You know, you don't burn down your house because, well, I just worry about my house burning down, so yesterday I just burned it to the ground, I don't have to worry anymore. What good is being in the church if they're not in the Lord? You remember the church at Laodicea? What did the Lord say about it? You're not hot, you're not cold, you're lukewarm, I'm going to spew you out of my mouth. What good did it do for anybody to be in that church? We've got too much of the world in the church in too many places. James 4:4 says, friendship with the world is hostility towards God. One of the reasons, you know, elders, it talks about there to have faithful children. One of the things involved there is wisdom. One thing we have to be able to do as parents, and as parents, we need to prohibit things that are not necessarily prohibited in Scripture. You have the right to make rules in your house. For instance, if you have a rule that, you know, lights out by X hour, then lights out by X hour. If you have a rule, no eating on the carpet, no eating on the carpet. You know, you have the, you don't have, look, well, does Deuteronomy say you can't eat on the carpet? It's your house. You need to have some rules for the running of that household. Now, let me tell you this. If you've got 400 rules and you enforce them, or if you've got 4 rules and you enforce them, both are better than having rules that you don't enforce. What rules you have, make them stick. But one thing we need is wisdom to realize where that's likely to go. So many times parents will let kids get started in stuff, and they'll think, well, maybe we better allow it. Stop and look down the road where it's going to go. Fourth grader wants to be a cheerleader. Oh, well, let's let her be a cheerleader. What if she's going to be a cheerleader in fourth grade, what's she going to want to do in eighth grade? If she's a cheerleader in eighth grade, what's she going to want to do when she's 16, 17, 18? And what do cheerleaders do? Any activity where you're required to have, you know, color-coordinated undergarments, there's a reason why. In other words, the length of those skirts and the jumping up and down there's a purpose in that, and the guys in the bleachers know what it is. Why should we choose choices that are leading in the wrong direction? If something leads a person away from God and righteousness, that's not a good way to go. There was an old Andy Griffith episode where they made fun of Barney for saying this, but there's a good point in it. Remember when Barney would say, nip it in the bud. A lot of things need to be nipped in the bud. You know, by the time you have a guy coming, you know, I saw a guy at the airport yesterday, his hair had all these spikes all over the place. You know, maybe they've got a safety pin through here. And the first time they say, hey, Dad, you know, I want to get this poster. And here's these horrible looking, you know, Megadeth, you know, something. No. You know, when you start seeing somebody show an obsessive interest in something that's of a worthless lifestyle, stop it right there. Don't say, well, we ought to let them go to the concert. Well, we ought to go. Yeah, and pretty soon all their friends are all into that, and that's all they're into. And it's just, and their hero isn't the Apostle Paul. It's some homosexual, drug-addicted, you know, Marilyn Manson or something. I don't know what he is, but in a lot of ways, I don't know what he is. The point is, realize when things are heading in a bad direction, don't go that way. Entertainment, attire, interest. The entertainment industry, there's so much garbage out there and so much better things people can be doing. Use some wisdom about that. Even just the things that interfere with family environment. You know, they sell minivans now where everybody can have their own DVD. So here you've got a chance for the family to spend some time together on a road trip. And what are they doing? iPod, DVD, you know. Let's have some family interaction time. Remember Deuteronomy 6? It said, talk about things with your children when you're going into work. It doesn't have to be the whole time be a Bible lesson, but have some family interaction and fun and enjoyment together. And number 11, thinking what the family really needs is more and more money. Have you ever seen a headstone that said, I wish I'd spent more time at the office? The book I read to you about from the other night, the journalist, he interviewed some famous Hollywood people that seemed to be successful, and he thought, be interested in secret wisdom these 70 and 80 year olds have. And he ended up not writing the article because he said none of them had any wisdom. You know, they'd not learned anything from life except one. And he reprinted an article, maybe you'd seen somewhere else, from Helen Hayes, the actress. But she went through and she talked about her life, but at the end, you know what she said? She talked about the demands of her career and of motherhood, and she said both need a lot of your time. And she said, my regrets aren't that I didn't spend more time on my career. Her regrets were that she didn't focus more on her family. And she said, I wish I had known that sooner and such. And dads, you know, we working all that overtime, and, you know, because, well, the family needs the jet ski, the family needs the boat, the kids need all this stuff. You know what the kids need more than all the stuff? A friend of mine in high school told me, he said, my dad, he said, he'll buy me anything. In high school, he had two Mustangs. He had a recent Mach 1 and he had a classic 64, 65, 2 plus 2. Two Mustangs in high school. He said, my dad will buy me anything I want, but he never played catch with me. Isn't that sad? What's more important, a better house or a better home? We talked yesterday about Titus 2:5 and worker and home stuff. But what's more important, the better house or the better home? If you can have both, wonderful. But if you can only have one, which would better be? How many of you have known people who are scarred today because they grew up in a dysfunctional home? If you've known somebody who's emotionally scarred today because they grew up in a dysfunctional home, raise your hand. How many of you have known people that are emotionally scarred today because they grew up in a house with shag carpet and mismatched colors on the washer and dryer? Anybody? No. People survive, you know, not growing up in the fanciest house, don't they? What do we need? We need good homes. Better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and turmoil with it. Better is a dish of vegetables where love is than fatted ox served with hatred. Thank you very much for your attention.